This is the worst podcast I've ever been on.
These guys are shit. It's true. It's true.
This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Our traveling fanboys.
Welcome, one and all, listeners from around the globe, right here to the L-shaped studio in Ho-Ho Loon Plaza in beautiful, serene, wintry Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. I am Greg Phillips. With me is the wintry mix, Nick Duke. Nick, how are you?
Why am I the wintry mix?
Well, because you're a little soft, you're a little, little hard.
Sir, I would have the personal details of our relationship left out of the podcast, please.
Oh, very well. Nonetheless, Nick, how are you on this this fine somber week?
I'm good. Why is it somber?
It's somber. We're saying goodbye to an old friend today, an old amigo.
Yes, I forgot. Yeah, that is the purpose of today's show. So yeah, it's been somewhat somber. I guess you're correct.
Bittersweet, perhaps, is a better word than somber.
Entertainment world, sports world, all kinds of major things going on. So yeah, you're right.
People returning, people fading away, people. Yeah, there's all kinds of stuff going on, but. That can be talked about later because we're here to deliver a eulogy of sorts, Nick. Eulogy for a show that has been there for us from the beginning of our show all the way back to the days of our column and really all the way even before that. One of the shows that kind of helped inspire us to start doing columns and get involved creatively with talking about comics. And that is a show that started on the CW in 2012 called Arrow. And in case you've been living under a rock, or you're like the majority of people that have never heard of our podcast, we've been dedicating the month of January to Arrow. This has been Arrow Month. We've looked at comics inspired by the show. We've looked at the show's very best episodes. And now, finally, we have arrived at the finale. This week marked the final episode after 8 seasons. The Arrow has come to an end. The show that launched an entire television universe had its final episode this week, going off in grand fashion with Stephen Amell and hanging up the hood and that cast and crew going their separate ways for now. But before we get to this finale episode, which we're going to talk about more in depth, let's talk about last week's episode of Arrow, because it was a little bit unusual, Nick, the way they did things this year. So they had we knew they were going to have an abbreviated final season. And of course, a chunk of that was taken up by Crisis on Infinite Earths. And at the conclusion of Crisis on Infinite Earths, as anyone who's listening to this should know, spoiler alert, if you haven't seen Crisis, you might just want to not listen to this entire episode, but if you haven't seen Crisis, or if you have seen Crisis, you know that Oliver Queen dies at the end of the Crisis on Infinite Earths. He is no more. And so we knew we had 2 episodes left of Arrow. How were those episodes going to go, not having the lead character? And so last week, they hit us with something of a backdoor pilot for what is hoped to be a spinoff of Arrow called Green Arrow and the Black Canaries. And it is a takeoff of the Star City 2040 concept that was launched in the flash forwards from last season of Arrow, and starring Mia Smoke and both of the Black Canaries, if you will, the Black Siren, Laurel Lance from Earth 2, and the Black Canary, Dinah Drake. So We got, in form of last week, a backdoor pilot for this show that takes place in the immediate aftermath of the crisis and is a much different Star City 2040 than what we experienced last year, which was a dystopia. This is more of a utopia of sorts. You have Mia Smoke, who is living in the Queen Mansion. Yes, the Queen Mansion is a thing again after the events of Crisis, which we'll talk about a little bit later on. Oliver has made some changes to the timeline through his sacrifice, and as a result, Mia has inherited the Queen Mansion, and she is engaged to John Diggle Jr., JJ. Unexpectedly, they are an item, and JJ in this world is a good-natured, clean-cut guy who never made the bad choices that he made in the original timeline. Meanwhile, Connor Hawke is, you know, as Nick put it offline, a bit of a ne'er-do-well who has got himself at odds with the law, has been in and out of rehab, and along comes Laurel Lance to shake everything up. She shows up out of the timeline claiming that there is a bad fate coming for Star City as a result of one event that happens, and it's the kidnapping of the daughter of Helena Bertinelli, a.k.a. the Huntress. Her daughter gets kidnapped, her granddaughter, whatever it is, and daughter, gotta be daughter. And it's up to Laurel to convince Mia and Dinah Drake, who has inexplicably been sent into the future as well, to go and hunt down whoever has kidnapped the lost Bertinelli child. So that's a mouthful, Nick. A lot of explanation there, a lot of exposition, but I thought this was a really effective backdoor pilot for the show. I came away wanting to know more about this world, wanting to learn more about these characters. I already liked Mia. I'm invested in Mia. I'm invested in Laurel at this point, this version of Laurel I'm invested in. And to a lesser extent, I'm invested in Dinah. And so they took that and they twisted some of our expectations with the two Diggle children, you know, Connor, who I loved all last season. And this season is playing a different role, and that's cool. And then seeing JJ in a different role was really weird because the guy just kind of comes off like a bit of a bad guy, you know, even when he's trying to be good.
Right.
And so I thought this was a really effective episode. The action was good. Nothing, you know, stand out in that department. Nothing mind blowing, but good. And they raised several interesting questions about a mysterious villain, William getting kidnapped, Mia getting reminded of the past world, and then at the end we see the sort of shocking ending of JJ being exposed to all of the memories from his past life, and how is that going to play out? What were your thoughts on this Green Arrow and the Black Canaries episode?
I liked it. I liked it a great deal, actually. And, you know, the mechanism of having these people get access to their past memories of the timeline that has now been erased and combine it with their post-crisis memories, it's a little bit wonky and probably hard for, you know, new viewers who may tune into the show without a longtime Arrowverse fandom. Maybe hard for them to wrap their heads around, but it sets up all kinds of interesting character dynamics that they can explore going forward, particularly as it relates to the Diggle brothers, because now you have Connor Hawke, who, as we said in this timeline, has kind of fallen into a life of crime, but can easily sit there and say, wait a minute, this whole other reality, arguably the reality that should be, I had everything in life. Everything was going my way, and my brother took it from me. And the same way, you could have JJ saying, wait a minute, I thought I had my life together, and now they put these memories in my head, and everything I do, it feels like a, you know, a betrayal of who I used to be. The one question I had coming out of it, now that we know that Sarah Diggle is alive, where was she?
Good point. Good question.
Because I would assume
maybe she's estranged from the family.
Have to play a role at some point, right?
Yeah. Maybe she's estranged. Maybe she's, you know,
maybe
off.
She's the person in the hood.
Ooh, Kuba. Or maybe the person in the hood is a person who got resurrected in the season finale.
Now wait just a minute. What exactly are you trying to say here?
I mean, Nick, if you're not, are your nostrils itching at all?
Quite frankly,
Well, it's funny you should mention that. So both of us enjoyed that episode, but we only talked about that because we kind of had to bridge into our main discussion tonight, which is about the finale, the season series finale, rather, and season finale of Arrow. How do you wrap up a show that has gone on for 8 years, that has spanned magic, that has spanned street vigilantes, revenge, justice, hope, fear, anger, betrayal, countless deaths, countless resurrections? How do you wrap all of this up and put a bow on it? The answer is it's almost impossible. However, I thought that the creators and the writers, the producers of Arrow, did about as good a job as you can in trying to serve your audience and also serve your story that you're telling. You know, this episode really encapsulated a lot of what made the show what it was, which was the relationships between the characters, the characters themselves and their dynamics between one another. You get to see one guy, really, let's be honest, one guy really carries the weight in this episode, and that's David Ramsey as Diggle. This mm-hmm. is, you know, one of the things we've talked about on this show in past years, about past seasons of Arrow, is at times it felt like Diggle was underutilized. I think both of us would probably agree on that, that they could have done more Diggle-centric episodes over the years. But whatever they did, they were good in general. And this is one that was great. And it was really because of David Ramsey's performance as he plays a man who was coming to terms, very slowly coming to terms, with the death of his brother and what that death means moving forward. And not only the death of his brother, Nick, but the loss and the death of his mission. So what were your thoughts on Diggle in this episode in particular? Let's start with him, because I feel like he was the real heavy hitter here that had to carry. We'll talk about all the other great performances, and there were a lot of great performances here, but I thought David Ramsey stood out because he had to do so much here.
Yeah, David Ramsey, as you said, was excellent. He really was kind of the centerpiece of the show, of the episode. I feel like maybe if Emily Bett Rickards had stuck around as Felicity for the entirety of season 8 rather than just coming back for this episode, mm-hmm. they may have given them almost like a dual focus. And I think even I read an interview with Guggenheim where he said originally their plan was to have the flashbacks in the season finale feature a point in season 1 where both Felicity and Diggle were working with Ollie and have it be a look back at the early days of that dynamic. But they only had Emily Bett Rickards, I think, for 2 days of shooting, and they would have needed that third day to fit in the flashbacks. So they kind of repurposed it to just focus on Diggle once they realized they were only going to have David, you know, weren't going to have Emily for those 3 days of shooting. So I can understand why right. it was focused on him, but he did a great job carrying the weight. And the aforementioned Emily Bett Rickards as Felicity, her coming back, man, she was outstanding in the episode. Mm-hmm. Broke me up emotionally several times. Really, those were the two. Those were the two that cut to the core of me, as it were.
Yeah, we get to see one of the other things that this episode did. We talked about the relationships, and we'll touch on more of those later on. But the show also was about flashbacks. Flashbacks were such a key part of this show, particularly in the early seasons. The first 5 seasons were heavily featured flashbacks, and so they used that dynamic here. And in this case, it's showing the impact that Diggle had on Oliver and the ultimate journey that Oliver took. So that in many ways, while the episode was about the legacy of Oliver Queen and how he eventually, we'll just cut to the theme of the episode, how Oliver saved the city, how he followed through on that promise from the pilot episode to save his city. Well, what we also see is that he didn't do it alone. That Diggle was there every step of the way, and that Diggle can take just as much pride in saving the city, because it was him that talks Oliver over the years into becoming the man that he is, into becoming that good man who turns that way from the monster that he was before when he was Capuchon. So excellent work all around from David Ramsey carrying the weight as Diggle. And of course, Diggle gets to deliver the eulogy for his friend. And I think that eulogy was one of the moments, Nick, that had that ball in my throat, if you will, as I was watching it and listening to it Their dynamic, that original Team Arrow of Oliver, Diggle, and Felicity, that was the heart of the show. That was what made the show tick, was those three relationships, the Kirk, Spock, and McCoy of the Arrowverse, if you will. And to see that those relationships get played out the way they did was very heartwarming. And Emily deserves a lot of credit for that as well. Seeing her back in the episode as Felicity Smoke, grieving her husband, meeting her daughter Mia for the first time in her adult life, seeing her little girl all grown up. That was, if that scene didn't make you emotional, I don't know what will, if you're a fan of the show, because that was, to me, that was one of the standout moments, was seeing Mia and Felicity have that moment together of, you know, at Oliver's funeral. Just such an amazing moment, Nick. What did you make of that dynamic in the episode? Because Felicity avoids Mia for much of the episode.
Yeah, I think they didn't want to overdo it a little, you know, too much, because we'd seen a little bit of them, you know, together in season 7. So they really wanted to keep it minimized, it felt like. But that one scene they had was extremely effective, and was, it made sense for Felicity. She wanted to enjoy knowing Mia as she knows her now. Not, she didn't want to become too attached to this older.
Right.
This old version, because she knows she's going to have time with her, time that Oliver, you know, would not get to have. The other one that broke me up, despite him only being in one scene, was, man, Barry. Grant Gustin popping up as Barry Allen, and in true Barry fashion, taking it almost as his fault, saying he felt like if he could have just done a little bit more, that maybe Oliver would still be there, and that was great. But really, I mean, across the entire pantheon, if you had outstanding guest appearances from pretty much anybody who ever played a major role in the show's history. The notable exceptions that weren't there would be Slade Wilson and Malcolm Merlyn. But other than that, pretty much everybody was here. Mm-hmm.
I would agree. Those were the two exceptions. Everybody else that I would have, I mean, maybe Walter Steele, you can make an argument for, but he wasn't really a major player on the show. I would say Manu Bennett as Deathstroke, and of course Malcolm Merlyn would have been the two you'd like to see there, but it's hard to complain because they had so many others they didn't have to get. Ragman, who we haven't seen since season 4, I believe, you know, coming on and making an appearance, and we get to see what became of him and how he ended up becoming a hero again, and has a nice little scene with Renee, actually. They had a bit of a contest, you know, a testy relationship when they were both on the show together. So that was cool to see him, throwing fan service is another aspect of Arrow that we have to address here that was always a big part of the show. And that you get that with Ragman's appearance. So Oliver changed the entire fate of the universe. He combined the multiverse into one world. And in this one world, things have changed. And we see that at the very beginning, Nick, of the episode, where we see that he saved his mother from Slade, that she never died in this world. And we see that that sets the stage for what we see later on. So Moira Queen is actually still alive in this universe. And by the way, she may be the one that is reminding Connor Hawke in the future, or JJ in the future, of what the past life was. But Moira is alive. Who else, Nick? Tommy Merlyn.
Yes.
Yeah, how could we forget him? Tommy is on there, played by Colin Donnell. And Tommy, the other thing about these characters, they're all so on point. It's like these actors never missed a beat with these characters. Tommy is pitch perfect here. The comedy, the humor, the self-awareness, the loyalty. I mean, just such a great character. Talia al Ghul is back. Nyssa is back. Emiko is back, even, which is another one that they didn't have to do, but they did to sort of give that closure. Anatoly shows up, Nick, at the funeral, and even gets a line or two. It was a jam-packed episode, but it did a great job of showing you all the different people that Oliver impacted and influenced over the years, the characters that came and went, but the ones that he made a difference in their lives, and they all got to show up and have these great scenes together. Roy and Thea get an arc during the course of the episode where finally, after 8 seasons of will they, won't they, turns out they will. Finally, Roy proposes to Thea. she accepts, and so the series ends with Roy Harper and Thea Queen getting married. They're engaged to one another, and that wraps up a will they won't they that has seemingly gone on for the entirety of the show, and a nice wrap up for those characters. Rene Ramirez gets to wrap up things and become the mayor of Star City, as we know he was going to be in the future. Quentin Lance is back. I forgot to mention him. He comes back, and they sort of wrap up the question of why didn't the original Laurel come back instead of the Earth 2 Laurel. So we get a scene with Quentin and Laurel where they kind of get into that. It's actually a really good scene with the two of them. Which of these returns did you enjoy the most, Nick? Was there any surprise to the fact that all of these characters are now alive?
You know, once I kind of started to see images from the finale leak out, promotional images and stuff, you got the idea that maybe the angle was going to be that Ollie had used his power at the end of Crisis to kind of give people this second chance and fix a lot of the things that he felt like went wrong on his Earth. So I wasn't necessarily surprised, but of those, I mean, seeing Tommy back obviously was probably the biggest one, just because I've been rewatching early Arrow and seeing that character and his death mm-hmm. and how much of an impact that had on early Ollie. It just kind of, that was the one that kind of hit home the most for me. But, you know, Moira Queen was also great. Pretty much anything that called back to the earliest days of the show were the things that got the biggest pop for me.
Yes. The return of Tommy, it was so excellent, basically very well done. What about the reunion of Sarah and Nyssa, which was pretty cool, which makes me wonder what would have happened had Ava attended the funeral. That could have gotten awkward quickly. But
oh my.
Nyssa referring to Sarah as her beloved in front of her sister, and the Al Ghuls are now getting along, so even the most dysfunctional families can reunite in the end. And we saw the Queen certainly unite as Moira invites Emiko into the family. And another candidate potentially for who could be the person in the future making JJ aware of his past. There were just so many little moments here and there. The talking about the flashbacks, going back to that, we get a flashback sequence because the other thing, we've talked about this throughout this month, and I've harped on it a lot because it's kind of my wheelhouse here, but the action has always been a staple of Arrow. It's been the best action, consistently the best action show on TV in terms of fight scenes, choreography, particularly when it's at its best, it's hard to top in terms of some of these tracking scenes they do, whether it's archery, whether it's gun smugglers fighting each other, whether it's hand-to-hand combat, close quarters combat, whatever it may be. Arrow has always excelled in this, and so for the last episode, they went balls to the wall, and they did it through a flashback sequence where we get to see Stephen Amell one last time tear through an army of anonymous villains, and that's what he does here. It is, if you ever wanted to see John Wick with a bow and arrow, that's what you got in this episode, because Oliver makes his way through a warehouse, and he is not showing mercy to these dudes. He is just downing people with arrows, one after another, and in super impressive fashion. That scene was phenomenal. The whole scene is one shot. It's what they call a one-er, and they follow him around the entire time, and it's just spectacular. Can't say enough about it. It's a great scene. Leads to a very, very tense scene on the rooftop where Oliver has to make a key decision, and it's that decision that shows us the impact that Diggle has on Oliver's life. So what did you make of this big action set piece that was sort of right after the midway point of the episode?
Yeah, it was awesome. I mean, it was really well done, and it felt like Arrow trying to remind you just one last time that in addition to the character dynamics, in addition to the plots, in addition to the excellent writing that we've seen over the course of the show, it's had arguably the best action of any superhero show that's ever been put on the small screen, and this felt like one last gift to give almost. It was very well done, and it was extended in a way that many Arrow fight right. scenes have not been, especially in recent years, where it felt like plot kind of started to overtake the action in terms of importance to the show. So yes, this was outstanding.
The other subplot that kind of happens early in the episode is young William gets kidnapped, and the team has to go out in pairs and try to find him. Comes down to Mia finding him, and you get a nice little scene with Mia and young William. Quite honestly, this was kind of a throwaway subplot that was just done to sort of move the narrative forward and give us some of these character dynamics like Thea and Roy and Ragman and some of these other things to happen. So, you know, not my favorite part of the episode. My favorite part of the episode was the funeral. Everything involving the funeral was,
yes,
was pitch perfect.
It really was. I mean, everybody being so hesitant to speak and then Diggle getting to speak, that was great. Getting to see characters interact at the funeral, like I said, Felicity and Barry and Kara, Tommy and the new version.
Tommy
of Laurel.
And Laurel, what a great interaction! Where we find out that in this world, Tommy and the original Laurel had gotten married, and that when she died, she was his wife. And here he's meeting this other Laurel, and he's like, "So you look like my wife?" And he's like, "I mean, it's pretty confusing." And also kind of nice. So
Tommy putting the moves.
Wasted no time. And so that was really good. And also back to the beginning of the episode, the throwback to what was it, season 6, where they were doing the documentary about the Green Arrow and kind of bringing that crew back to complete the documentary. Thought that was a really nice touch, and seeing how Diggle is struggling with that. And speaking of Diggle, we finally got it, Nick.
Well, we got an implication of it. We didn't, right. You know, I think, and they have said in various interviews, they took it as far as they were allowed by DC Entertainment.
Yes. I was gonna bring that up later, Nick, because we're going to bring it up now. Let's first of all talk about the elation of that scene. Like, I got emotional watching that scene, Nick, because we've been waiting on it for so many years, and the minute, not even opening the box and seeing the ring in it, the minute that satellite starts or the asteroid starts falling down, or the meteorite starts falling down to Earth. I knew what it was. I was like, oh my God, it's happening. Oh my God, it's happening.
Well, they had told us they were going to pay it off in some way. We all just assumed it would be during Crisis somehow. Right. That we would see a version of Diggle, like with the ring, you know, on an alternate Earth or something.
Right. And then when it happened, man, what an awesome scene and an awesome tease for what could be to come. However, isn't it eternally frustrating that DC wouldn't let it go further?
There was a quote, and I'm trying to, I don't remember what it was that Guggenheim said exactly. I'm trying to find it.
Regarding the Diggle and Green Lantern situation?
Yes.
While you're looking for that. Yeah, so it's frustrating to me that they could that they wanted to do more and they couldn't, at least not yet. Now that doesn't mean that we won't see John Diggle now be in the Green Lantern show on HBO Max. It doesn't mean that John Diggle can't be Green Lantern, as we find out that Diggle and Lila are moving to Metropolis. Who's to say that he's not going to be Green Lantern on the Superman and Lois show? We could very well see that, and I hope we do see one of those two things happen. We've got to see this followed up on. Personally, I would rather him be in the HBO Max show because I think that David Ramsey has earned the right to carry his own show and not be a sidekick. But we'll see how that plays out. I hope it does play out that way. But just the fact that, you know, there are so many strings to go through. I mean, I've seen it said, well, they don't want to be competing with their own property. It's not competing. It's not, you're not competing with yourself. You're using different avenues.
Right. Okay. Here's a quote that apparently Guggenheim was interviewed by Deadline and was asked about this and if there was a plan going forward. And what he said was, "I can't really speak to that at the moment because, like a lot of things, there was a sort of negotiation with the powers that be about, okay, what exactly can we show? How far can we take this? I think it's probably best, to me, the best approach was to let the moment speak for itself, and we will see where the future takes us from here.
Yeah, so we'll just, we'll have to take a wait and see to it, but certainly it's gotten all of fandom excited, all the Arrow fandom excited about what could be happening moving forward. I hope we get to see it paid off, because I think he's earned it. I mean, he's clearly into the idea. David Ramsey, the actor, is clearly into the idea, and it feels like something that
David Ramsey had this to say at a press screening where there was a media opportunity after. He said, "I don't know what it means, but he does go to Metropolis, and he did get a green box. We'll still see, believe it or not. We'll find out."
Very good. Very good, Nick. What a moment. What a moment.
It was great.
And then, of course, the show wraps up in the only way that it could, where we pick up from the end of last season as an older Felicity steps into the Paradise Dimension, the pocket universe, if you will, alongside the Monitor. And when she steps in, she's young again. She's her normal self. And she's wearing the same outfit that she wore when she and Oliver first met. And they're in the office where they first, or at least they're in Queen Consolidated. And she picks up the pin, the immortal pin that she dropped in the very first episode that she's on. Episode 3, I believe it was, when she and Oliver first encounter one another face-to-face. And Oliver has created this for them. This is where he wanted to meet her again. He wanted to see her where he first saw her. And she says, "Well, didn't we see each other in your mom's in a different office, a floor below?" And he said, "Not exactly." And they show us the flashback from season 3 of the young, bad-wigged Oliver peeking around and seeing a young Felicity Smoke before he had ever met her. Which I thought was an awesome touch and an awesome throwback for the show. And they get this moment together, this beautiful moment, and Oliver says, "I've got all the time in the world to talk to you," and we fade out, and we see Queen Consolidated, which is back, and it's just a beautiful scene, man, a beautiful way to end this show, the only way they could have ended it, in my opinion.
Yep, they had made a promise to us at the end of Season 7, that they had to follow up on, and we were all expecting it. And, you know, I saw a lot of people online who were loving this, and I saw some people online who were hating this, because the Olicity dynamic is one that, for better or worse, has divided the fan base. But to not end it on that would have felt inauthentic. It would have felt like it was trying to be all things to all people. And ultimately, the show has to be true to itself.
Yep.
A dynamic that grew the most, the dynamic that developed the most, and the pairing that had by far the most on-screen chemistry was Oliver and Felicity, and I thought the ending was outstanding.
Oh, absolutely. It was the way to do it. We were shipping them before they were even together on the show, so that was the way to go. They went there. It was awesome. It wrapped up the journey and left the possibility open to see these characters again, which is important. Because of the nature of what Oliver is now, where he is now, there's nothing to say that we can't see him again in the future. But I will say, Nick, after that finale, it needs to mean something for him to show up again.
Yes, I would agree. I would agree very much. It really should mean something, but we'll have to just wait and see, I suppose. I'm almost better if they just don't do it. I mean, the only way I can see it is if, like, you had another mm-hmm. crisis, essentially an infinite crisis, if you will. But, you know, I don't know.
Infinite crisis. I'm going to write that title down. I'll have to use that for a story someday.
The only problem is I feel like you can't really do infinite crisis, because the whole point of infinite crisis was bringing the multiverse back, and they didn't really kill the multiverse.
Right.
You know? Right. So I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. That's interesting. Maybe they could do it in a situation where I don't know if they'd be willing to do that, but a situation where the shows are getting – ironically enough, the shows are getting darker and darker. The worlds are getting darker and darker. And then Oliver has to show up and remind them of who they are. I could see that working. But it needs to be something important. And I'm with you on that. But, you know, looking back as a totality of this show, as we wrap up Arrow Month, What are some overall thoughts on the show? You know, we've been through the different seasons, we've been through the highs and lows of those, but what are some things that we maybe didn't talk about this month about Arrow that are kind of going to last with you beyond the show's demise?
Oh God, I don't know. I mean, I feel like we've covered so much over this mm-hmm. month. Ultimately, the show, it was the greatest live-action superhero show that's ever been made. It spawned a universe, and it has given us really the only satisfying live-action interpretation of the DC universe. Not of DC characters, but of characters existing alongside one another, long-form storytelling, something DC has not been able to do on the film side. This show really started everything.
Yeah, very much so. One of the things I had to think about earlier is characters over the years that I wish we had gotten to see more of. And the one that kept popping up in my mind was Ben Turner, Bronze Tiger, played by Michael J. White. Every time he showed up, he was great. And every episode he was in, was a good episode. So I was like, man, that would have been great to see a little bit more of him over the years. Were there any other characters that popped up along the way that you would have liked to see more?
Katana, I think, is the biggest one for me. Didn't really get to do much with her outside of season three. I think there was more to do there. I always liked Ragman. I thought he was kind of cool and could have done a little bit more with him. Those are the two that instantly spring to mind. Huntress, who just kind of disappeared after season two, you know, I always figured they would do some sort of Birds of Prey type follow up on that. They never got to do so. I don't know.
And I think they may have planned on it, and they had issues getting the actress because she was always busy with other projects, which is interesting because I've never seen her in anything else. But but apparently she does a lot of shows that I don't watch, but which would be most shows. So, but yeah, what an awesome show. What a great run this has been. It's you said it perfect. It's my favorite live action superhero show we've ever had. I'm really excited to see what some of these actors do post Arrow. I hope they all find great success. I'm sure some of them will probably take a break the way that Tom Welling did after Smallville. But I really want them all to have success because they all put a lot of time and effort and energy into the show and really exposed a lot of people to characters they had never heard of before. You know, I'll use my mom as an example. This was her favorite show. We talked every week about Arrow, and she had never heard of the vast majority of these characters. She had heard of, you know, your Superman, your Batman, and people like that, but she didn't know who Green Arrow was, except through Smallville. And she certainly did not know anything about Black Canary. She didn't know anything about the League of Assassins beyond the Christopher Nolan movies. She didn't know about so many of these characters that we've seen. Deathstroke, she didn't know who that was, anything about Slade Wilson. And she grew to know and love these characters over the course of 8 years. And I think her story is common of a lot of people. It was a moment in time that was just right for the kind of show that Arrow was, a bridge between the Christopher Nolan Batman movies and an MCU style approach. And it kind of melded those dynamics and those sensibilities together to create a really fully lived in comic book universe. So Greg Berlanti, Mark Guggenheim, Wendy Miracle, Beth Schwartz, all the rest of them, kudos to all of you. Thanks for this show that you gave us. And we just hope that the other CW shows can pick up the slack and keep soldiering on and giving us good content as well. But with that being said, folks, we're going to take a break. But we do want your Arrow memories. Tweet us at gphillips8652, at nickduke87. Join the Place to Be Nation Comics Facebook page. And leave us your thoughts on your favorite episodes, your favorite characters, highs and lows, etc., whatever you want to throw out there. So we're going to take a break. When we come back on the other side, we will have the rundown. We will have reading and watching. We might even have an appearance from an Okie.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following. Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have over 24 podcasts available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. We now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed, we dive into topics running the gamut from today's WWE to the glory days of yesteryear and the ins and outs of the territory days. In addition to our full-length shows, we also deliver to you special pod blasts on topics old and new.
The Place to Be Nation Pop feed is a veritable treasure trove of great content. Offer tremendous shows covering the land of movies, television, life, comics, and sports, brought to you by the most knowledgeable and insightful folks in the podcast world.
You can find all these great shows, plus archives of our past podcasts from over the past 8 years, as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while you're there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects, and much more. Be sure to support our site by using www.PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping. We want to thank our friends at Boneheads, Wing Bar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com as well. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
And we're back. Welcome back, World Wrestling Federation fans. We've got The Undertaker. And he's going to be taking on Bret the Hitman Hart.
No, he's not.
What do you think of my Todd Pettengill impression, Nick?
Well, that's pretty good. It just came out of nowhere, as it did, as they often do.
Yeah, well, that's not what our listeners in New Zealand think, I can tell you that.
Oh, listeners in New Zealand. They're still there.
Yep. They love us. They love us there. We're more popular than Opie and Anthony in New Zealand.
Are Opie and Anthony popular in New Zealand?
No.
Oh. Well, damn it.
Well, we've reached that time of the show, ladies and gentlemen. The time of the show when we like to talk to you about the news and notes in the world of comics. I don't know why my voice went high like that. That was bizarre. It's a segment called The Rundown.
Welcome to The Rundown. Where we talk some comic news.
Not a very loaded stack of news here, but nonetheless, that notwithstanding, quite frankly, we've got news from the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
You ready, Boots? Start walking. I almost called her Captain Marvel. Captain Marvel is getting a sequel. We all knew that was going to happen, right?
Yep.
Well, turns out the co-writers and director of the original film are not returning with the film. Anna Boden and Ryan Fleck, they wrote and directed the movie. They will not be back for Captain Marvel 2, but are in talks for some future Marvel Studios-related work down the line, including a possible Disney Plus series. What do you make of this? Apparently, WandaVision's story editor is Megan McDonald is in negotiations to script the movie. Don't know who's going to direct it yet. Nick, what do you make of this move? For the spinoff, I'm suspecting we could get a Monica Rambeau show, perhaps?
Monica Rambeau, or maybe they'll move over to Ms. Marvel or something. I don't know. I'm not really – this doesn't bother me that much because, like, same. Captain Marvel – it was a fine movie, but it was one of those that just falls into that middle to rear, you know, to back half pantheon for me of the MCU. And it was the one of the newest ones that just felt like it wasn't really trying to do too much different outside of the Skrull stuff. The Skrull stuff was great, yeah. No doubt. But I'm not opposed to a wildly different direction, or maybe not wildly different, but just a different take and different lens through which to view this character for the sequel.
I agree with all of that. Captain Marvel was a good movie. I watched it again recently because my parents had not, or my dad had not seen it, so we watched it with him at Christmas time, and we all enjoyed the movie. I think they liked it a little bit more than I did even, but I liked it. I just didn't think it was great. I thought it was good. And so certainly when you're good, when you start out good, there's a chance to become great. Maybe this could be a Captain America First Avenger to Winter Soldier-like leap for the sequel, potentially. So I think it's good news. And they'll get a chance to sort of try to spin off a new character, perhaps on Disney Plus, whether that be Monica Rambeau, whether that be Kamala Khan.
Well, remember, adult Monica Rambeau is going to appear in WandaVision. So
true. But certainly she's capable of, you know, having her own show at some point.
I'll be honest, I know nothing about the Monica Rambeau character from the comics.
Well, she was Captain Marvel before Carol was Captain Marvel.
Okay.
And she was Photon, I believe. Have you ever been a Photon, Nick?
No, I've never been a Photon.
You haven't lived until you've been a Photon. Hey, Howard the Duck. He's a duck.
He is. And his name is Howard.
Yeah. And Tigra is a tiger-like individual, as I understand it. And Dazzler dazzles with her mutant powers. But unfortunately, none of these characters are going to go to Hulu as an animated series. Marvel has officially shelved the planned Howard the Duck and Tigra and Dazzler animated shows. And Howard the Duck writer and executive producer Kevin Smith, I forgot that was even a thing, Nick.
Yep.
Confirmed to Newsarama that the writing staff of the cartoon was told that development had halted. Halted. Not altered. Altered is what happens when you're, well, never mind.
Good Lord.
So what do we make of this? No, I wasn't going to watch these anyway, quite frankly, so no big loss for me. But yeah. I know that some people were excited about this stuff.
I'm not that upset. I think it's just the latest step in Kevin Feige taking all the Marvel stuff in-house. And I have no problem with that. I mean, why shouldn't it all, if you can do it, you can do it effectively, tie it all together. Why not? Why, you know, don't let people just go off and do their own thing if you have an idea for characters. And so I have no issue with this.
Well, life, as we know, finds a way. Because where there is death, there must be new life. And in this case, the DC Universe streaming app is giving life to three pilots, not people that drive around airplanes like Hal Jordan, but three pilot episodes of potential series. This comes from the DCU unscripted solicitation project, basically, where they asked all the subscribers to DC Universe to submit their ideas and their pitches for unscripted shows to go on DC Universe. And of course, over 1,100 people submitted their ideas, their pitches for shows, and three were selected as finalists. They will receive three pilots, and then one will be selected to receive a full series order. The DCU unscripted finalists are Molly Brady from Los Angeles, who pitched a show where three cosplayers will show off their craft and creativity as they compete for honor, glory, cash, and prizes. Royce Miller of Bridgewater, South Dakota, where eight teams take on roles as hench persons to Gotham's most notorious rogues with the goal to escape Blackgate Penitentiary and its new warden. It's a game show with mazes, puzzles, and traps. And then Alora Powell had the idea of comic book fans traveling to beloved comic book stores in local neighborhoods to investigate how these shops provide inclusive, fun communities for geeks in real life. So let me ask you, Nick, any of these sound appealing to you, and what are your thoughts on this entire initiative?
The game show one sounds somewhat intriguing to me.
I agree.
It might be a little different. The comic shop one, a little less so, but still a possible thing. And the cosplay one, I will check out stills from if they catch my interest. So, you know, I'm a little disappointed that unscripted, I would have hoped that there would have been room for a documentary or something like that. Mm, about, yes. I mean, why not, you know, something looking at creators or you know, history of storylines, how storylines came to be, where the creative process, where ideas come from, all kinds of things that would have been more interesting.
Imagine a history show, like a history, like talking about the behind the scenes history of DC Comics,
right?
The feuds, certainly DC has just as many interesting stories as Marvel has backstage. And we've seen there's been a market for that in podcasts and books. So I agree with you on that. And also, Nick, they did not accept your pitch for a series that follows Margot Robbie everywhere she goes.
Which is unfortunate.
Yeah. I mean, I for one thought you had a good shot at winning. And so we'll have to, maybe the next round, maybe if they do this again, they'll recycle some of these pitches and they'll give you a call and give you the call up to the big time. Then you could leave your luxurious career and pursue the arts.
Yeah, that would be ideal.
And you could use your winnings from this series to fund the Hard Traveling Fanboys in our future excursions.
Future endeavors, yes. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's it. That's all we got for the rundown. Pretty short rundown this week. And, you know, we usually like to follow this up with us talking about the things that we have been reading, the things that we've been watching, the things that we've been playing. It's a segment that we like to call Reading and Watching. And playing. Well, Nick, you been reading anything?
I have not been reading anything, but I did watch the first episodes of Supergirl, Batwoman, and Legends of Tomorrow post-crisis.
I have seen one of those. I watched the comeback episode of Legends of Tomorrow. As we've talked about, I'm going to have to wait till the end of the year for Supergirl on account of the CW app being a big piece of doo-doo. Being a piece of doo-doo. It may not be a big piece of doo-doo, but it has prevented me from catching up. And Batwoman I should be able to catch up on actually now because I think they still got all the episodes up. So I will do so. But yes, Legends of Tomorrow. Let's talk about that first, and then you can talk about the other two. We see how the group on the Wave Rider are responding after the crisis. And primarily we see, as far as emotional threads go, Sarah dealing with the death of her friend and former lover, Oliver Queen. And she is not handling that death very well, and her teammates aren't making it easier as they're all kind of falling into their own worlds of superstardom, now that the Legends are worldwide phenomenons. Nick, what did you make of this episode?
I really enjoyed it. Had another documentary type approach to it, where they have this camera crew kind of filming them, trying to convince people that the Legends are still needed. I mostly enjoyed it. By the end of the episode, we get the departure, seemingly the departure of Mona from the show, which was very welcome.
Yep. Net positive.
Gary's role seems to have been scaled back, which was also welcome. I mean, just good things all around. And at the end of the episode, we see that part of the story of the season is going to be Nate going on a quest to get Zari back as we knew her, which is very welcome because her brother was fine, but not. He just wasn't Zari.
No, he wasn't great. He was just fine. He was there. He was entertaining enough. And most importantly, Nate's back on the ship. We're not going to have to deal with another season where Nate is not on the ship. So I'm glad Nate's back in the fold. A lot of funny stuff here. I mean, God, you know what's going to hurt the show is when Brandon Routh leaves. Because
yes.
Ray Palmer is a constant source of entertainment aboard the ship. Same thing with Mick Rory, Heatwave, amazing character. I loved his reaction when he passes his authorship on to Mona and she does not react at all the way that he expected her to.
Mm-hmm.
Tremendous. I did enjoy the episode. I think it was a great episode, but a good episode and setting the stage for what is to come. So good stuff there. Well, tell us a little bit about Batwoman and a little bit about Supergirl.
Batwoman was interesting because it picks up both right after Crisis and in the wake of the season, the mid-season finale, which saw some very major events taking place that I don't want to spoil for Greg, because I don't think he's seen them. So it was interesting to pick back up with that and see how the Alice dynamic is going to develop going forward. And then they threw a massive curveball into that at the end of this episode with the introduction of a new character that I'm very interested to see where this goes with her. I have a theory on what exactly is going on with this new character, but we shall see.
I was going to ask, were there any effects from Crisis in the episode?
Yes.
Interesting.
Yes, that is. Yes, there are, and you'll have to just wait and see what those are. This episode also dealt a lot with the idea of Batwoman and her sexuality, and not Kate's sexuality, but Batwoman's sexuality. As the press is continuing to get pictures of Batwoman and this male cop together, and quote shipping them, and she feels like she needs to make a statement to inspire people of her own community. So that was pretty well done. But yeah, good start for Batwoman. I'll have to wait to talk about it more in depth whenever you finally catch up. And then Supergirl, which you're also not caught up on, pretty good. Most of the episode is dealing with the fallout of Crisis and dealing with the fact that they now all are having to work with or for Lex Luthor at the DEO, which is not ideal in their eyes, of course. Lena is caught between all these people. Kara comes to Lena to tell her about everything that happened in Crisis, but by the time she gets to her, Lex has already given her memories back, and Lena kind of tears her down, saying, you know, well, just because you think that you came here to tell me the truth now, it was going to make me forgive you for lying to me all the time before. And so Lena is caught between, she doesn't know who to trust. Should she trust Kara? Should she trust Lex? Should she trust no one and go it on her own? And so it kind of sets Lena up again as this interesting wild card for the show going forward. So,
does it look like Lex is going to be a full member of the cast moving forward?
It certainly seems that way, yes.
Interesting.
Certainly seems
that
way.
And Lex is still presenting the veneer of an upstanding citizen.
Yes, absolutely. So looking forward to seeing where that goes from here.
Love it. Love it, love it, love it. All right. Anything else, Nick, that you've been watching?
No.
All right. No. Well, I have been playing a lot, as it turns out. I have been losing sleep. I've been losing thought, energy, and hours to Batman Arkham Knight, which I started just a week ago and have almost finished at least the main story portion. I am getting close to finding out the identity. I already know the identity of the Arkham Knight, but I'm getting close to the point in the game where you're supposed to find out the identity of the Arkham Knight. And I have to say, while I have my quibbles with the game, it's been outstanding. It really has. The story is so good. And that's really the strong point of the series, even over the great combat and the fun missions. The two strengths would be, one, it's a video game that really makes you feel like Batman, which there really, I don't know, had been a superhero game before this that actually made you feel like the lead character. And number two, the story is so good. And I always find myself getting sucked into the storytelling in these games. Even something like Arkham Origins, I get drawn into the mythology and the lore and the way they play with these characters that I'm very familiar with from the comics. But just putting that Arkham spin on them, if that makes sense, Nick, in a way that the animated series would do at times. So it's drawing from the comics more heavily, but it's also doing its own thing. And so I've really enjoyed it. The additions to the gameplay to make combat more challenging have been great, where you have to think your way through your combat a little bit differently than you used to. Think your way through rooms a little differently. Some of your gadgets aren't as foolproof as they used to be. I like that. It makes things a little more challenging. And yet it's very responsive and very smooth. And you know, that was the only complaint, really the only complaint I had about Arkham Origins, was the control scheme was not as tight as the responses at times and stuff were not as tight as they were when Rocksteady was doing the games. Well, here in another Rocksteady game, the controls are perfect. So really enjoyed that. The only quibbles I have with the game are the same quibbles that most people had, which is the Batmobile driving mechanics are utterly frustrating. And and some of the Batmobile levels are, I'm okay with difficulty. I had difficulty with several parts of this game, but some of those Batmobile levels, and one in particular, is so difficult that whoever designed it should have been strongly reprimanded, because it is the kind of difficulty that makes a game tedious. And a video game should never feel tedious, in my opinion, because I'm trying to escape from reality, not have my blood pressure rise for 3 hours trying to beat one level. And in this case, it was one level that took me an hour and a half to beat, where you have to defeat 7 of these Cobra tanks with 360 scanners, and it takes your vehicle, your Batmobile, about 10 seconds to lock onto the vehicle that they have, and you somehow have to have 10 seconds to lock onto them without being spotted by the Cobra tanks, which, by the way, move in formations and are surrounded by each other. Very frustrating. The Riddler races were frustrating. That being said, it's not all bad with the Batmobile, because there's some pretty cool stuff. Like, just driving around in the Batmobile around Gotham itself is fun. Even though the controls aren't super tight, it's fun. Getting to wreck shop with rockets and missiles and destroy sentry drones and stuff like that, super fun. But that's the only aspect, was the tedium of that. And also, as always with the Arkham games, I'm not a huge fan of the Riddler trophies, because there's so many of them, and it feels tedious at a certain point. But I will also say, amazing game. I don't like it as much as I liked Arkham City, but I do like it a ton. It has been so good. The voice work, the graphics are amazing. The combat mechanics, Nick, are still the best in any video game that I've played. I don't know if you would agree.
Glad to hear you're enjoying it. I actually think I like it a little bit more than Arkham City, but to each their own.
Interesting.
Yep.
Well, that all being said, that's all I got for that segment of the show. And I have to look at the plasma-infused clock that is currently floating through the L-shaped studio's office here. Mm-hmm. And it tells me that it's time for a little segment called... Actually, this is a big segment called The Wrestling Minute. That was a vaguely sexual noise you made there, Nick. WrestleMania is just over 2 months away as we record this.
Yep.
We're going to be there live and in public, if you will. And we are now officially on the road to WrestleMania. Sometimes it can be a bumpy road, but we're on it. And that is because the Royal Rumble was this past Sunday from WWE. We have 2 world title challengers in the form of Charlotte Flair, who has yet to announce who her opponent will be, and in the form of Drew McIntyre, who a week ago on our show, Nick, I made the bold proclamation, should win the Royal Rumble, but would not win the Royal Rumble. Turns out he did win the Royal Rumble, and he will challenge Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania 36. We also had Becky Lynch defeating Asuka, finally getting that monkey off her back. And we had Bayley defeating Lacey Evans. Roman Reigns defeated Baron Corbin, hopefully putting an end to that feud.
No. I don't want to hear any such things from you, sir.
Oh, no. I'm not besmirching King Corbin. King Corbin hasn't done anything wrong. But it's just time to move on. You know, if Roman Reigns hasn't learned his lesson at this point, you know, he's never going to learn it. The king just needs to, you know, needs to move on to another loyal subject who he might be able to convince of the error of his ways. Roman's just too hard-headed. We got that match, and then we got Daniel Bryan and The Fiend in a strap match for the Universal Championship, and that was an excellent match, actually. So, takeaways from the Royal Rumble. I thought this was a fantastic pay-per-view, top to bottom, and in particular, a fantastic men's Royal Rumble and women's Royal Rumble.
Yes.
And I think when you have 2 excellent Royal Rumbles, and they're buoyed by an excellent title match in the form of The Fiend versus Daniel Bryan, and a very good title match in the form of Becky versus Asuka, what's there left to complain about? You know, 2 lackluster matches? Oh, well, I'll take that. The show was paced well. The 2 Royal Rumbles were great. And, yeah, nothing much to complain about here. I know a lot of people are not happy about the finish of the Women's Royal Rumble. And I can understand that to a degree. I thought Shayna should have won, as we talked about a week ago. But In this case, knowing what we know now of where this is likely heading, I'm good with it.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to know that at the time. At the time, we thought it would just meant that we were getting Charlotte and Becky again right. for the eighth time, which that wouldn't have been bad either because they've never faced off at a WrestleMania one-on-one. That's arguably the greatest women's feud in the history of the company. You know, it would have been fine. But I think a lot of us wanted to see the Rumble be used to make someone new. And at the time when she won it, we thought that Charlotte winning threw that by the wayside. When in reality, it may turn out even better than Shayna winning. We'll see if the rumors turn out to be true. A lot of ins and outs and what have you still to play out.
Yes,
over the next few weeks, but. Going forward, can't complain too much. Edge back. That was the big moment in the men's rumble. The outstanding segment on Raw on Monday with him giving an impassioned promo and then doing a great beatdown segment with Randy Orton. The few things we know about WrestleMania right now, those being Drew and Brock, seemingly Orton and Edge, and then also Charlotte against somebody, all have some intrigue right now, and I'm looking forward to seeing how it plays out and where they go.
Totally, totally agreed. And another thing to be commended is, first of all, I love the Fiend character. Amazing. But Daniel Bryan, what a performer. What a performer. Just put him in a situation and he's going to deliver. Did it again. And other than that, obviously, AEW's rolling along. I haven't watched Dynamite yet this week, but I plan on it. I saw some clips from it that looked very interesting and entertaining. New Japan negotiating a potential TV deal with Viceland, Nick. So perhaps a chance for New Japan to maintain somewhat of a market in America. And other than that, we'll have to see how these partnerships work between the various companies. And that, unless you have something to add, Nick.
I mean, the only thing I have to add is that, you know, it's time once again to close this show the only way we know how, with a little musical number from WWE Hall of Famer Jim Ross. And, you know, when last you met good old JR, when last you heard from him, we were talking about, you know, JR going out on the town and trying to have a little luck with the ladies, you know, trying to pose that age-old question of why not me? And tonight I want to get into why he was posing that question, what his true goals were. Were they love, Greg? What do you think? Or were they something perhaps a bit more, I don't know, biological in nature, a bit more instinctual in nature, a bit more raw and sexual in nature? So with that question posed,
do you think that it was uncut, uncorked, uncooked, and uncensored?
I guess that's a question for JR to answer. So, JR, take it away.
Well, thanks again, Connie, once again for having me on the show.
I am not Conrad Thompson.
Whatever. That's one man's opinion from another black resist all hats, all I can say. Well, it's very interesting how this all came about here, Nick, because this is how things went when it comes to my motivation. I don't appreciate the question of motivation. You go on Twitter. Richards on Twitter like to do that. But right now, I want to let everybody know that I came into this world as a reject.
Look into my eye.
Then you'll see the size of these flames.
Dwelling on the past, it's burning up my brain.
Everyone that burns has to learn from the pain.
Hey, I think about the day my girlie ran away with my pay. When fellows come to play.
No, she stuck with my homies
that she fucked.
And I'm just a sucker with a lump in my throat.
Hey, like a chump.
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 Should I be feeling bad?
No.
Should I be feeling good?
No.
It's kind of sad I'm the laughing stock of the neighborhood.
You would think that I'd be moving on now, but you'd be wrong. I'm a sucker, like I said. Fucked up in the head.
Maybe she just made a mistake.
I should give her ass a break.
My heart will ache either way.
Hey, you know what? What the hell?
What you want me to say?
I won't lie that I can't deny.
I did it all for the nook.
Come on now.
The nook.
Come on now.
So you can take that cookie
and stick it up your ass.
Stick it up your ass.
Stick it up your ass.
Oh, yeah.
I did it all for the nook.
Come on now.
The nook.
I said, come on now.
So you can take that cookie.
And you can stick it up your ass.
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 Why did it take so long?
Why? did I wait so long, huh? Figured out, but I did. And I'm only under the only one underneath the sun.
Who
I didn't understand
get it, the lack of
I can believe that I can be deceived by my so-called girl, Jezebel. But in reality, I had a hidden agenda. She put my tender heart in a blender, and still I surrendered. Hey, like a chump. 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 Well, I did it all for the nookie. Come on now, the nookie. Come on. So you can take that cookie and you can stick it straight up your yeah. Straight up your oh yeah. Straight up your ass. I did it all for the nookie. Come on, the nookie. The nookie. Come on. Take that damn cookie. Shine it up and stick it up your ass. Stick it up your ass. Stick it up your yeah. I am only human, folks. Everybody makes mistakes. We all make mistakes, folks. We're all human. So it's so easy for your friends to give you their advice, to tell you to let it go, but it's easier said than done. I appreciate it. I do. But just leave me alone. Leave my ass alone. Leave my ass alone. Just leave my ass alone, for God's sake. Ain't nothing going to change. I'm going to do the same thing I've been doing for 40 years in this business. I'm going to be me. That's all I can do, folks. If you can go away, I'm just going to stay here. I'm going to be me. Ain't nothing going to change. If you can go, take your ass out of here. You don't like it. I'm still going to collect a paycheck, folks. I'm friends with Tony Khan. I'm friends with Nick Duke. I'm friends with Craig Phillips. I'm still going to be here, whether you like me or not. If you can go away, I'm just going to stay here. I'm going to be the same. What I'm getting at, I'm going to be the same. If you can go away, I'm just going to stay here. I'm going to be the same. What I'm getting at, I'm going to be the same. If you can go away, I'm just going to stay here. I'm going to be the same. What I'm getting at, I'm going to be the same. If you can go away, I'm just going to stay here. I'm going to be the same. What I'm getting at, I'm going to be the same. If you can go away, I'm just going to stay here. I'm going to be the same. What I'm getting at, I'm going to be the same. I did it all for the nook. I'm being straightforward here. Come on now. I'm telling you the truth here. The nook. Come on. You can take that cookie. You can stick it up your ass. Stick it up your ass. Stick it up your ass. Conrad, I did it all for the nook. Not a little bit of it now. All of it. Come on now. You can take that cookie. And this is what Watts told me. I remember Watts took Hacksaw Butch Reed and Dr. Death. They'd been in a knockdown, dragout fight. He told them both they could take that cookie. He was holding a peanut butter cookie in his hand. He said, you can take this cookie and stick it up your ass. Stick it up your ass. Stick it up your ass.
Our traveling fanboys.